Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. Congressman David Price is in self-quarantine at home in Chapel Hill after having had close contact with a member of Congress who had tested positive for the coronavirus. Price says he is feeling fine and that the first priority is to protect people's health. The second priority is to protect their economic well-being. Price spoke to News and Views producer Clayton Hinkle last week about some of the success as well as some of the hurdles he and his colleagues are facing.
Well, Congressman David Price, welcome back to News and Views.
Thank you.
We are indeed in unprecedented times. We have seen disruptions in our lives because of COVID-19. Everything from our schools closing, our children at home, our favorite restaurants being asked to shutter. There are so many fronts on which people are concerned. Before we start talking about specifics, what would you want your constituents to know?
Well, first of all, that this is something that has affected the whole community, and the whole community is responding and supporting one another. We're especially mindful of the need to look out for people who might be especially vulnerable in places like nursing homes and retirement communities and places where there could be especial vulnerability. But we're also so indebted to people who are helping the community and working with the community in this situation, starting with healthcare providers who are on the front lines and who are doing wonderful self-sacrificial work. But it comes down to people in all walks of life, people who are still, running the grocery stores or whatever kind of services that we need to keep life going under these very altered circumstances. So we want everybody to be safe and to protect themselves, but we know that we're going to be dependent on some very courageous people who continue serving, and we want to give them all the support we possibly can.
We absolutely do. And let's talk a little bit about health care. We've heard about shortages of tests, the slow rollout of getting results back in. Are you confident that our health care professionals will have the support that they need in the months to come?
We're going to push toward that goal relentlessly. We've got to. You may have seen that on a bipartisan basis, I and other members of our congressional delegation sent a pretty strong letter to the White House about the shortage of kits and testing equipment and kits in North Carolina. The testing capacities are coming online at UNC and Duke and around the state, but they're still not where they need to be. We're low on some kinds of protective equipment as well, and are stocking up on that. The masks, the medical, the ventilators, and so forth that the sickest people will need. There's a need to really push continually to get where we need to be on these fronts. And, you know, there'll be plenty of time to look back and say what should have been done differently. I'm not satisfied at all with the way the federal administration handled this early on, all the way from President Trump minimizing it to the agencies not having the wherewithal to get the tests out there, and a couple of false starts on that. We will revisit that later. Right now, we just need to keep pushing to get the equipment where it needs to be and the testing capacity where it needs to be. We've got to get to the point where we're testing much, much more widely. We have no idea what's out there right now. We are just testing the most obvious cases, and we've got to do a good deal more than that.
We know that there is a lot of work going on around a vaccine. We know that UNC, medical professionals really everywhere across the globe are racing to try to find this, but that's a ways off.
It does appear to be. I think, can't expect a miraculous break. It's going to be a matter of, one hopes, months and not over a year, but it's not going to be immediate. There is the question also about treatment regimens, how people are treated who are symptomatic, and antidotes. Those things are under research and experimentation as we go along. But, of course, ultimately, we got to get a vaccine, and our scientists here in the Triangle are part of that really global effort to develop this. It's very complicated to have a division of labor among research efforts and to make sure that all the avenues are being explored. But our scientists really are fully a part of that.
Until we have that vaccine, it really is critical that people follow the guidelines, and that means, in many cases, staying home.
Yes, it does. And those guidelines are more strict and more inclusive, it seems, every day. And they need to be in some communities where the impact is the greatest. I'm thinking of San Francisco and Washington State and New York City. Those places are in virtual lockdown and need to be. We don't want to go there as far as if we could possibly help it here. But on the other hand, I would say, I think most people feel, let's err on the side of caution. Let's stay in. Let's not have public meetings or gatherings. Let's be very careful personally. Let's try to head this off. This is going to be a major pandemic. It already is. The issue is not whether it hits, but how it hits and how suddenly and all at once it hits, in the sense of being a huge spike in demand all at once that just puts such a strain on our facilities and personnel. Or can the curve be flattened, as they say? Can it be spread out so that the impact is, first of all, it doesn't involve as many people, but it doesn't involve as many people all at once. And that's what the community protection measures achieve, hopefully, to just slow down the impact of this, ultimately to blunt the impact.
Let's talk a little bit about workers who've been affected by this, retail jobs, the restaurant industry, the other members of our hospitality field. They've seen their fortunes dramatically change in a handful of days. What help do you hope will be in place to make them whole?
That's what's under discussion, of course, right now in Washington and at all levels of government and in the private sector, too. I mean, there are a lot of decisions that are going to be made in all those places that will affect millions of people. I do think our approach should be to focus on those people first. I mean, we will do some major corporate funding to keep planes in the air and keep our infrastructure together. But the people who make the country work and the people who are going to be affected, and as you say, a lot of these people are not in corporations. They may be in the gig economy. They may be self-employed. They may be at this point not have jobs. There are people in very, very vulnerable situations in, retirees and homeless shelters. I mean, the possibilities are just endless. But the approach we've taken so far, we've passed two bills at the federal level, both around $8 billion. The first dealt with the immediate medical costs, the need to do the research you were talking about, the need to shore up our community health centers and public health departments, the need to have medical personnel in place and so on. Then this last bill, of course, makes the testing free, so people's testing shouldn't depend on their economic situation or whether they have insurance. Everybody who needs to be tested should be tested, and that should be not an economic consideration. So we did do that. We have a extended unemployment compensation. That's a state level issue too. We have sick leave and family and medical leave now available throughout the full array of small businesses. You know, a lot of devil in the details. We worked very quickly on that and are looking now for the Senate to approve that today, we hope. So now we turn to a much larger package that deals with everything from the airlines and the airports to all the museums closing to just anything you can imagine almost. The list is endless. And I think our approach there, that's where this people first emphasis comes in. We got to look out for the workers. We got to look out for the people. And if corporations get support, then the first thing we ought to ask them is, what are you doing for your workforce? And how are you minimizing the impact on the people that work in your organization and the people you serve? And that is probably a matter not just of putting money out the door, but it's also a matter of the conditions that attach to that money and what the rules are as we deal with people in this crisis situation.
Indeed. And as we were talking about sick leave, we know it's critical that workers who may be sick or they may have to care for someone who's sick, that they stay home to prevent the spread of this disease.
And absolutely. And that's what I said about the economic circumstances of getting tested. It certainly applies there too. I mean, someone needs to stay home if they have symptoms or if they think they might be a carrier. You can't let it be that people's economic anxieties work against that kind of sensible behavior. That's why you say we're going to have universal sick leave. We're going to have universal family and medical leave for those who need to protect themselves or protect others.
Let's talk a little bit about schools. Parents, I know, are very anxious to hear that it may be weeks, that this school year may be a loss. Is the federal government going to look at revisiting SNAP in helping many of these low-income families who rely on public schools for multiple meals a day?
Absolutely. I should have mentioned that because that was a major component of the first bill I described. And that means that what you're talking about is in the very top tier of needs. We have a huge dependence in this country on school-based food and nutrition programs. You know, a lot of kids get their meals, their best meals, through school lunches and school breakfasts. And then for older people, too, you think about Meals on Wheels and various food programs. You know, vulnerable people are going to have their very basic food and nutrition needs disrupted. And so what are we going to do about that? So that's a major component of this first bill. It provides money to deal with this, but so much of implementing is going to depend on really heroic efforts at the local level for us to reconfigure the way we feed children, for example. Fortunately, we do have some experience in summer feeding programs. I visited some of those programs here last summer, as a matter of fact. You know, just because school's out doesn't mean kids don't need breakfasts and lunches. And so we have some experience in the off-season provision of meals, you might call it. And so that is going to be pressed into service and already is being implemented, as well as intensified capacity to deliver meals to the elderly. So, yes, that's absolutely basic, and that just comes so closely tied to our schools and the way they operate that it's really the first question we got to answer. What happens to those feeding programs once the schools aren't bringing kids together?
We've been talking about just enormous figures in these different packages and different bills that are going to be rolled out. Are members of Congress talking at this point about the national deficit? Can you even afford to worry about it at this point?
Well, worrying about it's one thing. We always should worry about it. And by the way, we didn't worry about it enough or about the possibility of something like this developing back when the president got his tax cut, mainly benefiting the wealthiest people in this country and taking us $1.5 trillion into the hole in terms of the deficit and the debt. So that's extremely worrisome long term that we've taken away that kind of slack, you might say. We really have put so much into that tax cut with, I'd say, very limited economic benefit. We got a sugar high in the economy for a while, but the economy was doing very well. We didn't need that tax cut then. We do need serious measures now, and we're in a weaker position because of that tax cut to do this. Having said that, we've got to do it. We've got to do it, and it will be a major impact on our fiscal situation and on the economy. This is sort of like the Recovery Act back when we transitioned from the Bush to the Obama administration and immediately had to do something just short of $1 trillion in terms of an economic recovery package. Some people hesitated at that. It's on a partisan basis, I'm afraid, but they talked about how we needed to limit the impact on the deficit and the annual deficit and the debt, but we had to do it anyway, and then you bring the economy back, and then that addresses some of those issues as the economy recovers. That's what we got to do here. And the figures are actually greater than we were talking about for the Recovery Act. I don't think there's much question this will go over $1 trillion, this bill number three, this more comprehensive measure. It looks like it's going to involve some direct payments to individuals coming together on that. That's to keep people afloat and also to put demand back in the economy, to keep the economy from going farther south than it's going to go already. Those cash payments can really help both individuals and help cushion the situation overall. And then, of course, the extended unemployment, the deferred interest charges on student loans, those sorts of things, that also helps put money in people's pocket and keep them whole. So that's a big part of it. That's maybe as much as 250, 300 billion of the trillion is that direct payment to individuals, which then turns around and comes back into the economy immediately. And then there's the whole range of support for all aspects of the American economy beyond that.
Obviously, we've been talking about the federal government's response. What would you like to see the state do in terms of helping North Carolina? Obviously, Governor Cooper is making some adjustments with the unemployment insurance program. What else could the state be doing during this time of crisis?
Well, the state has many responsibilities in the area of emergency management, and we're one of the better states in terms of how we do this. I'm proud to say, and I think the governor and Mike Sprayberry and the folks who do this are doing a good job. We unfortunately have had all too many hurricanes and natural disasters that we've had to where we've had to immediately offer emergency help and then long-term recovery. So this isn't quite the same as that, but a lot of the infrastructure is there and can work in the same way, and they're being deployed. The governor, of course, is the most visible state leader. I think he's made good decisions about the schools and about the suggestions that he's made, and they're, of course, more than just suggestions to keep public assemblies to a minimum and to close places of business that would where we can help, as I said, slow the spread of this and blunt its impact. And I think we have yet to see exactly what kind of immediate relief might be necessary for people. When you think about the absolutely most vulnerable people, let's think about a homeless shelter where people might be pretty close quarters. I've talked with one of our mayors the last couple of days about the need to get an additional facility online and to move some of those people into more spacious quarters so they're not confined in that way. There will be other vulnerable populations maybe where they need to be relocated or located in a different kind of way. I think we're just beginning to understand what some of those requirements might be. And to the extent we have to do that, the capacity we have at the state level for emergency management could be quite critical. I think before this is over, it will be.
Whenever we have a snowstorm or a hurricane, we're talking about a matter of days or a week, even with recovery. We're not talking about anything on this scale. So sometimes it's hard for people to put their heads around being told to stay home that long, particularly when it's something that you can't immediately see. Do you have a final bit of advice for listeners who are anxious about the future and the ability of our leaders to get us through this?
I think it's a combination, I suppose, of advice and an expression of gratitude. I think even though we're going to be distanced, we certainly don't want to be isolated. We don't want people to fall through the cracks. And that's a big challenge for us in our immediate circles of family and friends and also our public roles. So I do want to thank everybody up and down the line who are making the adjustments that need to be made, who are giving good, solid advice. And that's another thing I'd counsel, I suppose, is, you know, seek good advice. For example, if you're experiencing symptoms or think you might be and need to be tested or need to talk to someone, then call. Don't go in. Call your primary doctor. And if you don't have a primary doctor, call the county health department for some guidance or the community health center. And just take advantage of the resources that are there to get good advice, get reassurance as to what kind of steps you should take. So, yes, seek good advice. Follow the advice of the governor and others who want to keep us distant now and keep us in a position where we don't have as much contagion of this, and reach out to each other as we do. You're right about the fact that we've had experiences with hurricanes and disasters. We learn how resilient our community is. This is not quite the same. In fact, in some ways, it's more testing, more trying, because it this is an invisible plague which is descending on us in a very slow and frightening way. So we need to be especially thoughtful of each other and also mindful of the things we need to do. And when we obey these directives and obey this advice, you know, we're not just protecting ourselves. That's there for the benefit of the entire community.
Congressman David Price is the Dean of North Carolina's Congressional Delegation. We thank you for your time and your leadership during probably one of the most challenging times that you have served.
Thank you. You're right about that, and we'll all pull together.
Coming up next, if the coronavirus has disrupted your sleep and has you increasingly worried, stay tuned for our interview with the head of NAMI NC.